Let's chat with John Hovind, NHL writer and contributor at SiriusXM NHL Radio. And John, obviously right now we got to start with the Edmonton Oilers, who won again yesterday at Madison Square Garden. They did a nice job defensively holding the Rangers to not a ton of shots. And they're 6-0. James Neal keeps scoring. I don't know what to make of it. Do you?
No, I don't actually, because in doing our preseason, you know, predictions, which of course they're worthless the minute after you put them down on paper or you know, email them off. But I had the Oilers as my sleeper team to finish last place in the NHL. I mean, it's easy to pick Buffalo. It's easy to pick, you know, Ottawa, but I just don't like the makeup of that Edmonton roster, and I thought that they would be down near the bottom of the rankings, and certainly they're making me look bad here at the first part of the year. But you have to think at some point that James Neal is going to come back down to earth, and you know, Dave Tippett is one hell of a coach, though, so you know, you can't discount what getting a guy like him, you know, means to that franchise. And it's interesting to see how he's going to use Draisaitl and McDavid going forward, how much time they'll spend together versus apart.
So I keep looking at their roster and don't love defensively what I see there. Larson's hurt. The goaltending with Smith and Koskinen is also a big question mark. Is it just fair to look up and down that roster outside of a few players and say, well, it's only a matter of time here before the other shoe drops?
Well, I think it is. I mean, because I think that's what you see in the National Hockey League every year. Is you see that certain teams get off to, you know, poor starts. When maybe now we could be talking about San Jose on the other side of it. You look at that roster and you say, wow, you know, it's only a matter of time until they flip that script. And then it's the same thing when you look at teams that get off to a hot start and you look at the rosters and you go, okay, can they sustain this? You know, even with Carolina, with all the success that they had last year in the playoffs, you know, does that roster have enough to keep up at the pace that they're going right now? And you know, just again, circling back to Edmonton, like I said earlier, I just don't like the makeup of that roster, as you mentioned, on defense as well. So you have to wonder, goaltending and defense, which tends to historically help out a great deal in the National Hockey League. I mean, teams can overcome poor D and poor goaltending at times, but that's typically where I like to start to look when evaluating a team, and I'm not really high on what they have in Edmonton there. So I guess for them to win, they're going to have to rely on their top dogs there and try to win a lot of high-scoring games as the season progresses if they're going to keep up near the top of the Pacific Division standings.
In conversation with John Hovind, NHL writer and contributor at SiriusXM NHL Radio, Josh Goldberg here on Sportsnet today. And the player who was drafted second overall back in 2015 to Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel, has been terrific, and Buffalo has been terrific to start the season as well. I'm not putting the cart before the horse because this team did win 10 in a row last year, and then the wheels very much fell off, but what do you like what you've seen so far from Buffalo?
Well, I think a lot like we were just talking about with Edmonton. I mean, when you look at the roster, they have a little bit more to work with. There have been questions outside of Jack Eichel. How many other sort of elite players are they going to be able to, or what they're going to be able to squeeze out of those other players to be able to get some elite performances? And again, you get a new coach. It seems like a lot of these teams that we're talking about right now have new coaches in place. And when you get a new coach, there are a lot of questions about kind of the juice that you get off of that for the first 30 days or so, and then things, you know, potentially start to settle. So in Buffalo, I like the fact that you're seeing more than just Jack Eichel, because they have some young kids that have a lot to offer, and it's just difficult because even though everybody talks about this being a young man's league now and so, you know, how you're younger and younger when you're breaking into the National Hockey League, the truth of it is it's a very small handful of kids, you know, under the age of about 22 years old that can produce at the NHL level. It's one thing to be playing in the NHL. It's another thing really to be producing. I mean, you even look at Jack Hughes and all the hype with him coming out of the draft last year. And it's not exactly like, you know, over the first handful of games here that he's been lighting up the NHL. And you just saw Kako get his first goal, I think that was last night. So, you know, it takes time for these younger players to acclimate. And while they might be ahead of the curve by a few years compared to the historical days of guys maturing at 25, while they might be a few years ahead of the curve, it still does take, you know, 50 to 100 games of NHL experience to really start to get these guys going at a level where they can produce consistently. And that's the most difficult thing. Anybody can look good on any one given night, but it's a matter of producing, you know, consistently. And thus far through five games, the Sabres have been able to you know, put together five good games.
How much of a factor do you think the Ralph Kruger hire is? Because he's an unconventional thinker. He does things differently. It didn't go great for him in Edmonton, but everyone swears by his coaching style and his personality. Yeah. So do you think that that's already paying some dividends?
Well, it certainly appears to be paying dividends because of the fact they haven't lost a game yet, you know, in regulation at least. So I'm with you, though. He does a lot of unconventional things. You know, the hockey world seems to be really high on him. I do like some of the stuff that he did outside of the X's and O's. You know, I heard some of the interviews that he did first after being hired, and he talked about, you know, sort of going around the town and hanging out in local sports bars and really listening to what Buffalo Sabres fans had to say about the team. He was, you know, wasn't there as the coach. He was just, you know, some dude sitting at a bar and chatting it up with people around him. So it was interesting that he was willing to sort of immerse himself in that culture. The Sabres fans are, you know, Buffalo fans are Sabres crazy. So to be able to sort of understand what they're seeing, what they've been frustrated with, and then for him to try to, you know, sort of rectify those situations. I thought it was an interesting approach, unconventional, maybe, to borrow your word. The results early on have been positive, but you do have to wonder, because there have been so many changes. I mean, what is that, like 27 coaches in the last 25 years or something, it feels like, in Buffalo?
Yeah.
There just have been so many changes, from coaches to philosophies to players. You would just like at some point for there to be some continuity in Buffalo, and then to be able to see what they can do with that continuity over a 3 or 4 year span.
In conversation with John Hovind, contributor at SiriusXM NHL Radio and an NHL writer as well, as he joins me here on Sportsnet today. I'm Josh Goldberg, here until 7 o'clock Eastern. Another team that's been very interesting to watch. They exploded offensively in Minnesota last night. Sidney Crosby's been terrific, but they're battling injuries with Malkin and Galchenyuk and Hornqvist, all banged up and in and out of the lineup. What do you make of Pittsburgh, and do you expect trader Jim Rutherford to make a splash here in the near future, or ride it out until we have a more firm timetable for a Malkin return?
I'm actually a little bit surprised that he didn't go the trade route or even the waiver route, because there were a couple of options that were available to him on waiver there, you know, at least immediately, just to try to add a little bit of juice, you know, given how he's not somebody who panics, but he certainly isn't somebody who is extremely patient, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, a guy like Bob Murray in Anaheim, who will wait things beyond, you know, what you would think would be an acceptable waiting period. So, Pittsburgh, you know, tape and chewing gum at this point, I guess. You know, you're trying to hold things together. Their big splash came over the summer with, you know, Phil Kessel leaving, and that is a roster that continues to age. However, they've done a marvelous job over the last, you know, maybe 5 years of putting in stopgap players, bridge players, to be able to get to some of their younger players and or integrating some younger players as well. So you talked about goaltending earlier, and, you know, there would be, I think, some questions with the long-term viability of the goaltending there in Pittsburgh, and do they have enough to really get to the promised land, not just to making the playoffs, but can they make a deep run with what they have there? Sid continues to be Sid. He's just, you know, the consummate professional, like a Jaromir Jagr before him and so many other players that just, they age gracefully because they're committed to their craft. So the early signs so far appear to be okay. What, I think they've won 3 games through 5, so they're holding steady right now. But I do agree, back to your first question there, I do believe that at some point you're going to see some activity and some action within that roster, just to try to, for them to keep up. Because, again, you look at what Carolina's doing at the top, and it's early, so we don't need to panic. It's early. But Carolina looks very strong, and, you know, they're always competing with teams like Washington for the top of that division. And then the Flyers are on the come, and you have to think that they're going to push for a playoff spot. So very competitive division, and that means that you can't waste time, you know, even when you're early and you're talking about October.
We've seen Chicago, a similar type of team who's had a long period of success with homegrown talent, sort of, I wouldn't say rebuild, but recalibrate a little bit. DeBrincat's been brought in there and been a nice shot in the arm for them. But their Stanley Cup window isn't really there anymore, whereas Pittsburgh hasn't really done anything to that effect and still fancies themselves, when healthy, as a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. Do you think we're getting close to the point where it might be time for Rutherford and the Penguins to maybe make some alterations, to bring in some younger talent, and maybe not look at it as Stanley Cup or bust?
Well, you have to look at the success that they've had in the playoffs and how competitive they've been. And while they haven't been in the Stanley Cup final in a number of years, you know, this is still a team that is competitive come playoff time. So I think that's one of the reasons why they don't believe that their window has closed. And again, back to the general manager, you know, here's a guy who's not afraid to go out and add a piece and make some deals and wheel and deal a little bit. So if they can hang tough, you know, in their division, and then you get to the trade deadline and they can perhaps scoop up a piece or two, whether it's a younger player or even a rental, to try to push them over the edge and, you know, give them another maybe kick of the can, it certainly is possible. However, you look at that Eastern Conference and you look at the teams that are up there near the top of the conference, and you just have to think that, yeah, that window is closing, that they're not at the top of the playoff, you know, eight teams, if you will, and they're not at the bottom. They're kind of stuck in that middle, which is almost the worst place to be when you're a playoff team. You have to be able to push to get up over to that top, and they're not in that upper echelon, and obviously injuries have a lot to do with that. You know, Letang has had some unfortunate, you know, from a timing perspective, his injuries over the last couple of years, and now the Malkin situation has to be concerning. So it's much easier said than done to be able to say, hey, let's go out and get some youth, and let's let our draft picks play, and that sort of thing, especially with the fan base that's been so conditioned like they have for decades now, really with you know, to win. That Pittsburgh fan base, you know, they're used to winning. They've had some lean years, obviously, but they still think at this point that they're a Stanley Cup contending team if they get the right pieces and get the right help. So if this team went on a long losing streak, you know, or wasn't doing well come the trade deadline, then I think it's more appropriate at that time to maybe have a conversation about tearing it down and looking ahead.
Before I let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts. The Sharks are playing Calgary later tonight at home. They're 1-4. They looked really slow and not very good in those two losses to Vegas. So what do you make of their early season struggles? Is it fair to panic, or do you think over the long haul with DeBoer and all of that established talent that they'll figure it out?
A lot of question marks around the Sharks. They're probably one of the most, if not the most, perplexing teams for me right now. I mean, obviously, you know, Dallas and New Jersey, who were the darlings of the summer, and everybody, myself included, liked those two teams. Maybe Colorado is the three trendy picks coming into the season. You know, the San Jose Sharks were expected to be a very solid team this year, even with the loss of Joe Pavelski. I wasn't a big fan of the fact that they were going all in so heavy on their defensive group with the money that they were willing to spend on Carlson, for example. And then the whole you know, bringing Marleau back thing, just don't like the timing of it. I mean, if you're going to bring Patrick Marleau back, then you need to do that in the summer. You don't have to push the panic button after just a couple of games and try to get that guy in there. I think it sends the wrong message to some of their younger players, especially to a guy like Johnny Brzezinski, who we know here in Los Angeles, you know, he was a Kings draft pick and really never found his way and was hoping to find his way there in San Jose, but he ends up on the waiver wire to make room for Patrick Marleau. So I just didn't like that move, and I think it was a little bit of a panic move. It's to go back to something that's comfortable, and then the goaltending, you know, you expect more from Martin Jones, and to think that it's even possible that he could lose the net this early in the season. I don't quite want to say that it feels like what happened in LA last year, where they were coming off of a strong season the year before with Kopitar at the heart, you know, Hart nominee, and Doughty and Norris and Quick and the 98 points and, you know, all that stuff. They come off a great year, and then boy, things unraveled and they had to fire their coach. But boy, there are some early similarities to what is going on in San Jose. So they are a team that I'm going to be keeping a close eye on here over the next 2 weeks and kind of see how this thing shakes out and if it gets any better.
John, appreciate the time as always, man. Good stuff. And we'll do it again soon, okay?
All right, Josh. We'll talk to you later. Have a great one.